It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, animals are helping out with physical therapy. We talk about a new grad school program here in Wisconsin that trains therapists to get a boost from a four-legged helper. First, instances of abuse within the Catholic Church have been widely publicized in the past 20 years. The U.S. Department of Justice and multiple states are now investigating the sexual abuse of children by clergy. Ireland, Germany, and other countries around the world are reporting widespread patterns of abuse as well. Pope Francis has condemned the abuse. Earlier this year, he convened a conference of bishops to discuss the protection of minors in the church. Our next guest thinks a more fundamental change is needed. He says in order to root out abuse and ensure that the church stays relevant to its members, traditional Catholic power structures need to be dismantled. James Carroll is a National Book Award-winning author, historian, and journalist. He's also a former Catholic priest himself. His recent cover story for The Atlantic is titled Abolish the Priesthood. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. My pleasure to be with you.
We've talked about the abuse scandals here in Wisconsin and around the world a lot, and you paint a straight line from the institution of the priesthood, from clericalism, as you describe it, to that abuse. Can you connect those two for us?
Well, it's a I'm grief-struck to discuss this and to be writing about it the way I am. But yes, in a nutshell, the church's maleness and its misogyny are inseparable from the church's structure, and they are both at the root of this current dysfunction, the abuse of minors by priests, and more momentously, the way in which the vast majority of bishops, almost all bishops, support the predators instead of the victims. So the church's maleness and the church's essential denigration of women are key problems, and they are both tied intimately into the structure of the priesthood, and that's what I'm calling into question.
A key part of your piece, I think, is the idea that the Catholic Church is worth saving. It does a lot of good in the world. It isn't enough just to leave and do something else. Can you make the case for the good in the church that, in your eyes, make it worth trying to tackle this problem?
Well, you know, people have been leaving the Catholic Church in droves, even here in the United States, which has been a very strong Catholic tradition. My strong argument is that we Catholics who are alienated from the church structure over this crisis should not leave but stay with it, because the church is a crucial institution. It's, of course, for those of us who are believers, a transcendent presence of the Holy One, of God, in the world. But more than that, the church is the most far-reaching global non-governmental organization on the planet. It crosses boundaries of rich and poor, highly intellectual and illiterate, north and south, technologically savvy, technologically ignorant. It's the only institution that crosses such borders on such a scale, and it does tremendous good around the world. There are more than 1 billion Catholics. Legions and legions of them run about 150,000 schools and universities, about 50,000 health centers and hospitals. These are Catholics doing the work of the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, as we say. They are the heartbeat of the church. Most of them, of course, are not clergy, although many are religious sisters. And my strong conviction, what I want to shout from the rooftops, is this institution is urgently needed for the future of the human species. We must see to its reform so that it is fully rational, free of superstition, not fundamentalist, committed to justice, social justice, as is the tradition, and above all, becomes a tribune of the equality of women, which, as you know, is an urgently important signal around the planet of the healthy future of the human people.
What would the Catholic Church look like in your positive view without the hierarchy as it stands now, without the current institution of the priesthood?
Well, it's important to step back a little bit and see history. The church has taken its culture and structure from surrounding norms and traditions since the beginning. So in the beginning, the church formed itself in many ways in imitation of the Roman Empire. The diocese, for example, began as a Roman local government institution. The basilica began as the palace of the emperor. The trappings of the Roman Empire shaped the early church in powerful ways. And then in the Middle Ages, the trappings of feudal monarchy shaped the church in many ways. The pope became a kind of feudal monarch. The bishops became imitations of the secular ranking of lords and barons and princes and so forth. We even have that phrase, prince of the church. The culture of the Vatican reeks of the Middle Ages that established it, really. So what I'm arguing for is in the tradition, the church should move, as it's begun to, more fully into a culture of liberal democracy, a church that is fully transparent, engages with lay people as full equal members of the church, certainly women as full equal members of the power structure of the church. The church doesn't need to look like a medieval monarchy. That's not the will of God. That's an accident of history. So this movement toward a more democratic structure can sound in a way heretical, but in fact it began early in my lifetime during the Second Vatican Council in the early 1960s, which was the beginning of a movement of the church toward structures of democracy. It was short-circuited and didn't fulfill itself, but that's where we have to head in the future.
Talking to James Carroll about his cover story in the Atlantic titled Abolish the Priesthood. He's calling for fundamental changes within the Catholic Church. Could some of the same goals be accomplished with a more modest reform, more transparency, more authority to punish wrongdoers, the predators you were talking about? Could you get rid of the bad stuff without such a radical change?
Yes, that's a great question. I think, alas, I've come to this more radical position. I'm essentially a conservative person temperamentally, but I've come to this because of the failure of the church over these 20 years of this festering scandal to deal with it in any real way. The kinds of reforms that you refer to could be readily implemented, and they haven't been, not even by Pope Francis, who otherwise is such a magnificent and revolutionary figure. The starting points are obvious. Ordain married men and ordain women. Bring women fully into the structure of the church's ministry and governance. The fact that the church doesn't do that is a moral offense at this point in history. The Catholic Church is standing against the equality of women at a time when institutions around the world, having learned from the great gift of the feminist revolution, have been themselves bringing women fully into positions of power. The Catholic Church can't be the only institution to stand against equality for women. So it's because of the failure of the church over the last 20 years to properly respond to the scandal of predator priests and complicit bishops, and now especially with the wonderful papacy of Pope Francis, but who has really profoundly disappointed the hopes that many of us put in him, because he hasn't put in place an authentic and responsible new alternative structure of handling the sex abuse crisis, nor has he been willing to dismantle the structures of clericalism. Interestingly, Pope Francis is eloquent in denouncing clericalism, but he never says what he means by that. Clericalism is the church's maleness and misogyny built into the structure of the priesthood, and he does not uproot it. And that's been the great recognition for me and I think many others. I'm treating this moment in the church's history as an emergency, and I'm really just saying it's not time for business as usual. We have to stop thinking in sort of the usual terms about how the church operates.
I think a concern among many Catholics is that if you were to adopt a model based on more on liberal democracy, might be a church then that moves with the tides in public opinion when at least some people would view the church as something that's supposed to be a steward of certain values that shouldn't change with public opinion.
Well, of course it should. It should. Liberal democracy I'm talking about is not majority rule. It's not taking cues from so-called public opinion. But there is an old Catholic tradition, the vox populi, the voice of the people. We believe in our traditional language that the Holy Spirit lives in the church and that the experience of the Catholic people is trustworthy, that we can learn from it. That's not the same thing as taking opinion polls, but it is a matter of paying attention to the experience of the people, the Catholic people. The Second Vatican Council defined the church not as the hierarchy, which is the way we usually think of it, but as the people of God. And liberal democracy is—I don't mean to make a fetish of that. And I'm not talking necessarily a republic governance. The university is an example of a liberal democracy, and yet it has a very clear and strong structure of authority. So please don't misunderstand me. I'm perhaps not speaking quite clearly enough. Liberal democratic values is what I'm looking for, what I'm advocating. And that means accountability. It means the power structure is accountable to the people. That's not the case now. It means transparency. That's not the case now. The secrecy of the cult of the priesthood is one of our biggest problems. And it means accountability for sin and for crime, a readiness to hand over the adjudication of crime to civil authorities, which the church is still resisting, even in this grievous matter of the abuse of minors by priests. So the values of liberal democracy can enshrine the essential values of the gospel. That's what I'm arguing for.
We're talking to author and former Catholic priest James Carroll about his recent cover story for The Atlantic. It's headlined, Abolish the Priesthood. James, as you mentioned, you're disappointed in the actions that Pope Francis has taken on these fronts. You say a lot of people within the hierarchy aren't going to want to end the hierarchy as it stands. You have kind of a prescription, an internal exile for Catholics. What would you want to see happen to make these changes?
Well, I'm not advocating the founding of a new church. Let's be clear about that. I've been a mass-going Catholic my entire life. And when the Pope was in Ireland last summer, his sadly inadequate response to the crisis in Ireland, which has been ground zero of the moral failures of the Catholic Church, that's what actually drove me to this new place I'm in. And I found it impossible to continue to go to Mass, which was a shocking thing to find. And I began what I discovered as time went on over the weeks and months. I began a kind of informal, personal version of what we used to call in the Catholic tradition fasting and abstinence. I'm in a position of fasting and abstaining from the Eucharist itself, from going to Mass. I've understood myself as not in exile from the church because I refuse to leave it, but I am in what I'm calling internal exile. My assumption is that the structure of the hierarchy, the bishops and priests, are in a state of moral collapse now and soon to be a state of utter collapse as fewer and fewer people are priests. More and more Catholics leave the church. More and more people stop believing in the authority of the church. And so what I'm really advocating is that we stay with the church, even if we stay away from connecting with the organized, ordained structure of the church. That's what I'm doing. I'm not clear on what such a stance leads to. I'm certain that the Catholic Church will go on. I think it is important to stay with it so that the worst impulses of the church can be challenged and the best impulses can be supported. And I think we can patiently discover other ways of affirming our Catholic identity. There are many groups around now, women who have stopped going to ordained masses, who have formed groups of their own. In many places, the priest shortage has led to more and more lay people taking responsibility for various aspects of the church's life. We're in a period of evolution right now. We can't really say for sure what it leads to, but to do two things at once, detach from the corrupt, ordered, hierarchical structure of the church with its, for example, misogyny, its rejection of equality for women, say no to that, even while kind of standing loose with the forms that our religious practice takes, affirming our Catholic faith, maintaining our commitment to the corporal works of mercy, the heart of the gospel, maintaining especially our allegiance to Jesus Christ, and understanding that the church is nothing if not a community of people who lift up his memory. That's the first meaning of the church. And then trusting in the Spirit to see where this goes. Again, this is no time for business as usual. The bishops, and I'm sorry to say Pope Francis, are inviting a kind of business as usual approach, as we saw with the recent Vatican promulgation of the ways in which the abuse scandal is to be handled going forward, which was another version of business as usual, saying no to that, and then trusting this position of not being entirely in the fold.
Talking to James Carroll about the future of the Catholic Church, I want to bring on a caller now. Paul is with us in Prairie du Chien. Paul, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say I'm in agreement with your guest. I have two siblings that teach at different Catholic institutions, and you know, under Wisconsin law, if they know something's going on that's immoral, whatever, they are supposed to inform the police. But each year before school starts, they have a diocesan meeting with the bishop and the attorney for that diocese, and they're told, you go to your pastor and only your pastor. If you go to the police, you'll be fired. And yet, under the law, they are supposed to go to the police.
Paul, thanks for the call. Of course, we can't confirm that that's actually happening there. But, James, you've seen similar things in other institutions, other Catholic institutions.
Well, not just that. The Vatican promulgation of 2 or 3 weeks ago, a document called in Latin Vox Estis Lux Mundi, which is now the official policy of the Catholic Church on how to handle accusations of abusive clergy abusing minors. And one of the disappointments in that document, it moved the needle forward somewhat, but not nearly enough. And one of the main disappointments is that it does not require bishops to report to civil authorities credible accusations of minors being abused by priests. It requires those reports to be forwarded to other church officials. It's an example of what Paul just lifted up from the experience of his siblings. The church is still not requiring the reporting to civil authorities of credible accusations of minors being abused. This document does encourage church personnel to obey the law where they are. And so if the law requires it, then that should be obeyed. But the church policy itself does not make any such requirement, which is a significant signal of the way in which clericalism still has the bishops of the church in its grip.
in our last few moments. James, do you have hopes that the church can change as you see it for the better?
Well, of course I do. I wouldn't be continuing as a Catholic if I didn't. And the single largest example of that is my own experience as a young man watching the church make a huge leap forward with the Second Vatican Council under the leadership of the great Pope John the 23rd. Pope John changed the church in a few short years more than it had been changed in centuries. For the better, the most significant example of that was the way in which, with Pope John leading the way, the church renounced the pillar of anti-Semitism, which was the Christ killer charge lodged against the Jewish people. The Second Vatican Council said no to that, despite almost 2,000 years of tradition to the contrary. So I have seen a tremendous movement forward in my own lifetime. And I believe in the holiness of the church. I believe the Spirit is alive in the church. And I believe in the goodness of the Catholic people.
We'll leave it there. James, thanks for joining us today.
Rob, it's been my privilege. Thank you.
That's James Carroll, author, historian, and journalist. He was with us to talk about his recent cover story for The Atlantic that calls for abolishing the priesthood as it currently exists to save the Catholic Church. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time.